Up next, we're going live to Ireland to talk to Muriel Ford Clark. Her work, Where After? Where Do Our Loved Ones Go After They Die? It's an amazing story. And then in our last hour, we'll take your calls with her on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you about Muriel Ford Clark. Since her own near-death experience in 1992, we'll have her explain that. Muriel Ford Clark has dedicated her life to exploring the mystery of life and death. She has studied many cultures where the afterlife is considered our true home. And from the various research gleaned, she now understands that a belief in the afterlife determines and impacts on just how one grieves. And her book is called Where After? Where Do Our Loved Ones Go After They Die? Her website is her name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Muriel, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, George, from the western shores of Ireland. And it's great to be here. And I know it's nighttime there, so good night to everybody listening.
It sure is. What time is it in your neck of the woods?
It is 8:10 a.m.
Well, great. And tell us about your near-death experience in 1992. What happened to you?
Well, I suppose to start, my near-death experience happened when I was on the operating table. I had been diagnosed with serious and extensive cervical cancer.
Oh, my gosh.
And at that time, too, my life was very complicated. I was very unhappy in my marriage, and death would have been a welcome reward for me at that stage. And when I died, apparently on the table, the surgeon had said that to me later. He said that somebody, definitely, he said, in a higher power was watching over me. He said I had bled outwards continuously, and I had died, and I had been pronounced dead, and they kept working on me. So days later, when he came and presented me with all these, like, facts that I should have died, I said, first of all, I said, why the hell didn't I? It would have saved me all this conflict and all this sadness that my heart and my soul was feeling. And then I started to think, okay, why did I survive? Why was I the one? Why could I not have died and found my peace? But during my near-death experience, the peace, the serenity, I was totally drawn into a light-filled, like, vacuum. It was full, and I can still see it now as I'm speaking to you. We're filled with this beautiful golden energy, golden light. I was embalmed within this beautiful, to me, it was a God-like. It was a God presence. I felt so peaceful. There was a serenity in my body that I had not known. I felt at one with all of creation, and I needed to stay there. There was no pain. There was no conflict. There was just this heavenly love. It was a love. There was a music that just resounded that I had never heard before. And that place still remains with me and remained with me long after my NDE. So much so, it compelled me to start research, to start reading up, to start finding out what are NDEs, why some people survived, how I had a vivid recall of the other side and what happened and being told it was not my time. But then I suppose, George, I can tie it back to when I was much younger. I had this incredible, amazing spiritual experience when I was just 15 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
So profound was that experience with Mother Mary coming to me that I could not tell anybody because I was afraid that I would be cast aside, as often happened in Ireland when you had some kind of a spiritual experience or if you were gifted, you know, with psychic abilities. So I stayed very quiet about it for nearly 20 years. So when I started to research about the NDE, in my own NDE, I was drawn back to that spiritual experience I had all those years ago when I was 15. And I started to recover much quicker. I started to bless my body. I started to bless the relationship and to give me the strength to do what I needed to do at that stage. And I left my marriage, and that it took 3 years then before I could really, really start the mental and the emotional healing of the body. And then the spiritual body needed a lot of healing, because I had a big journey of self-discovery on life after death and the journey of the soul, reincarnation, past life regression. And I started studying all of these various modules. Even though I have a scientific background, I graduated as a serologist in veterinary science. So my whole self was being challenged, because the left side of my brain was just familiar with data and experiential learning and analysis and logic. So then I had to start, you know, working with my more creative, my right side of my brain. And it was just amazing, you know, what unfolded through the journey over the years.
When you had your near-death experience, did you have the classic out-of-body experience with it as well, or did that not happen?
I remember myself just being floating out of the body. And not that I was... Now, there was a huge commonality, George, you know, with people who are NDE experiences, mm-hmm. you know, floating above the body, seeing themselves like rising from the bed and watching doctors trying to resuscitate and revive them. They remember going through a tunnel and being drawn into a light. I remember being drawn out of my body and being more or less catapulted into this magnificent light. So I take from that while there are huge commonalities on NDE, not everyone has the actual same experience, but the commonalities are the same. And, you know, when I didn't have that feeling of being catapulted back into my body either, which some have, where they are feeling that they are just a thud and their heart starts to beat again and the brain starts to function and the pulses start to moderate. So mine was, while it was a huge NDE, I didn't have the tunnel. I did have the light. I did have the floating above my body. I did have this beautiful presence of love. And I feel it was a God light. I didn't have the bridge for somebody, but a hand did extend across the ether to say it was not my time. And I firmly believe, George, to this day, that it was my father's hand who had died the year previous. I feel that he granted me this divine dispensation, or petitioned a dispensation from the good Lord for me. So that was my experience of my NDE, but it has never left me, George. It will always remain, and it becomes more magnified and more precious as the years go by.
But you think it was your father who kind of convinced you to come back to the physical plane?
Well, I would say, put it this way, George, it was my father's essence that I recognized.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was working through a God presence, but it was him I recognized. And at that stage, George, I would have done anything for my father. And later, after my NDE, my father actually appeared to me. That was my I had an after-death communication. I've had many of them, and I've witnessed many of them. But when my own father appeared to me, when I was having one of my major, major panic attacks, where I had lost my breathing, I had lost my breath, I was choking, I couldn't sit up. And my father's presence sat on the bed in the middle of the night in the dark. And I could see his outline, I could see his shirt, I could see his blue cardigan. And he kept saying to me, "You are all right now, Akudin." Akudin was his favorite name for his daughters. Akudin is the term of endearment. It's like my love or my little pet. You're okay. So I remember looking at him, George, and I said, "Dada, you need a haircut." And my father loved his hair. So his hair, like, we used to have to nearly tie his hands behind his back to have a haircut. So, and I remember saying, "Daddy, you need a haircut." And he smiled and he folded his arms. And then I reached over to turn on the light and he was gone. So I've no doubt my father petitioned. Well, I would say it wasn't my father, but it was his essence that I recognized that it was not my time. So obviously, George, I was spared for a greater purpose. And I think finally now, all these years later, writing Whereafter and adding in my own experiences with clients and the research, the medical and the scientific research, as a proof of, as evidential proof that the afterlife is real and it's available to all of us, irregardless of religion, belief systems, dogma, creed. The afterlife is available to all of us.
At what point, Marielle, after you came back, did you get involved in this, the research of near-death studies and the belief that this really happened to you?
Okay, I suppose, George, the first year I spent on recovering, on getting my body
back in shape,
to wholeness, back to perfect health.
Okay.
And then I went to London and I did a workshop with the late Louise Hay on You Can Heal Your Body. And I remember getting her book and she autographed it. And I came back home to Ireland and I started to read her book, an incredible book.
Oh, yes, so she was an incredible person.
Oh, and it was such an honor, George, to have met her and to have hugged her. And I thanked her for her work that has helped many. And she said, "Well, honey, that's what we're here for." And it was just, she was so natural. She was so beautiful. But when I got back home, I started to read the book in depth. And I came to the section on forgiveness. And I went, "What? Forgiveness?" So I just licked my fingers and I passed all the pages got to do with forgiveness, because in my books, I was perfect. I did nothing wrong. I didn't need, forgiveness. I needed to really lick my wounds and feel that I was a victim of my circumstances. So it took about 3 months, and I lifted the book again. And one morning, I was reading through the chapter on forgiveness, and she said to get a mirror and to look at yourself and to spend time looking at your face, looking at your eyes. And it was at that moment that I had a huge breakthrough, and I broke down, I cried, and I realized that I had to take and accept my part in the breakdown of my marriage. It wasn't all one-sided as I would have thought. I realized that I was, my actions, my behaviors, my words, all had a contributing factor to where I was right now on my healing journey. And most of all, I had to forgive myself and I had to release myself from the victim mentality. It was so lovely to feel victimized, because bless my ex, my life had been very challenging with him. And he was a policeman with rank. So any form of abuse would, at that stage, would have been, I felt, not believed.
Right.
So I had a lot of forgiveness to do, but I think the most important part was that day, that morning, I released myself from the ties and the bonds of victimhood, and I set myself free, and it was through the forgiveness. And funnily enough, George, the forgiveness process is one of the huge aspects that I teach in my workshops. But the last phase of the book is all about love and forgiveness. And with love and forgiveness, we become whole again.
At what point in the near-death experience did you realize there's something very weird here and very real?
I suppose for me, it was contemplation afterwards, when I was actually in it, it was like my body was light. My body was not the heavy, tormented soul that it was on the earth plane. My body was light. It was free. It was love. It was filled with love. It was filled with this beautiful energy. There was music that resounded. Obviously, I know now it was with my soul lesson. And this energy and this presence has stayed with me. And the point I suppose I'm trying to say, George, is it was only afterwards when I was told that I was so lucky to be alive that they can't, the surgeon said he couldn't understand how I survived. And it was afterwards I realized how really blessed and lucky I am and that I must have been saved. There must have been a God reason, a God purpose for me to survive. And maybe now that the whereafter is written, that whereafter was totally guided as well. And then the NDEs, when I started to research them, to realize that NDEs, George, have been documented for thousands and thousands of years. It's hard to believe it. And, you know, the oldest surviving reports of NDEs goes back to Plato. And Aristotle, Socrates, I discovered, they all believed in an outward journey, that the soul leaves the body and takes this outward journey into the afterlife. And NDEs are very, very commonly recorded. Now, there are many doctors, many psychologists, psychiatrists that endorse the afterlife. There is wonderful research in NDEs and the reports by doctors who have endorsed their patients that were pronounced clinically dead. And at the risk of being ridiculed by their medical cohort, they have said, no, this is happening.
Yeah.
People are coming back and they have vivid, vivid recall of who they have met, what they had witnessed on the other side, what they were told, how they were stopped, how they were told to go back. So all of this has been, I suppose, a huge passion and a journey of self-discovery has arisen from that, George.
Prior to this episode for you back in 1992, were you a believer in life after death?
It's funny, George. My schooling, I was educated in the earlier part of my childhood by nuns. And we were all taught about hellfire and brimstone.
Yep.
And if we were bold, we were going to be punished. There was a devil with a pitchfork and a tail, and we were going to be cast into the fires of hell. Now, that was a very, very daunting analogy to give any child. So I always challenged the nuns, and I said, no. I said, no, God is not like that. God is loving, and he loves me no matter what I do. And God is going to give me multiple chances. If I go wrong, he's going to bring me back towards the light. But the nuns then would, what they would do, bless them. And I will have to say bless the nuns because they have provided great services throughout the world. What they would do then, they would put me behind the blackboard and put a dunce's hat on my head for the remainder of the day.
Hold on, Marielle. Hold on for a second. We're at a break. We'll come right back and pick it up right there on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we'll take your calls with Marielle Ford Clark as we talk about her work, Where After. It's about the afterlife, so make sure you're part of the program. We've got much more to talk with her about when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with Marielle Ford Clark as we talk about her latest work called Where After, Where Do Our Loved Ones Go After They Die? Marielle, let's talk about the belief system on the other side. When you passed on, of course, you didn't see hell or anything like that. What did you sense that you felt?
George, what I felt was peace. I felt serenity. I felt whole. I felt a loving presence was in me and surrounding me. I felt that this was a place I now realize was a heaven, part of the heavenly realm. And there was total peace. There was total serenity. I was held in a sacred vacuum. For me, it felt like hours and hours. I felt I had been there for a very, very long time. And I feel and I felt that I was being imbued with healing light. And this light, I now know, was the unconditional love of Creator. And that light, that love, helped me to heal and become whole again over the following year after my NDE. So for me, it was a loving presence. And from what I understand now, from all my research and from people I work with and from those that I have studied under, like Deepak Chopra and Dr. Brian Wes, they all endorse that the most important thing after a near-death phenomenon is the feeling of love, and that we come back. And no matter how we were in our physical form before our NDE, we come back recharged. Some of us have come back where our spiritual and psychic gifts have been awakened. Some people come back with music in their soul to write, even though they never read music, they never played an instrument. And we're sent back with a message. Some write books. Maybe this is where I've come in now, all these years later, that I've had the courage to put it all together, because I was guided by spirit, the format of where every section in the book was going to go. And the first part of that, I suppose, George, was to show the scientific and the medical proof and the data there to endorse that the afterlife is real and that the afterlife is for, as I said, for everyone.
Do you come back as a changed person, Mariel?
I believe I came back, George, for a reason, and I believe I came back a better person. First of all, the most incredible thing was I had absolutely no fear of death and dying anymore. I had none whatsoever, and I think most people with most NDE experiences, their fear of death is totally dissolved.
Right.
Because we have seen where we're going to go. We have been in that nucleus of divine love and light, and it is love that is going to be the key on our journey in the physical plane, and it is love we will return to in the spirit plane.
If somebody is a murderer, serial killer in this current life, and they die, and you say there's no hell to punish them for what they did, what happens to them? Because they can't share and occupy that same heavenly realm that you have when you're a good person. What happens to the evil human?
Okay. And that was my thinking about this lovely heavenly place. My theory, like you, was, well, surely that, you know, evil people like the Osama bin Ladens, like the Hitlers, like the Mussolinis, that surely to goodness they're not going to be in the same plane as Mahatma Gandhi or Mother Teresa or someone that has really enriched the world because
right.
of their presence in it. My understanding, George, from what I am being given by spirit, is that when the soul leaves the body and goes to the spirit plane, there are many, many different spheres or different levels in the heavenly plane. And whatever vibration or frequency or mindset that you have on the earth plane, you will go to that earth plane. And for those that are wrongdoers and have created dreadful acts of violence and murder, they go to a very lower level of existence. But in saying that, my understanding from the spirit world is even those who are wrongdoers, that they will get a chance through intercession, through prayer for people from the people here on earth, that they get an opportunity to grow towards the next level. But they must be a willing subject to grow and to arrive. Maybe it's like what I'm being shown, as even as I'm speaking to you, George, it's like a step ladder. There are so many rungs on the ladder. So you arrive in this level of your own frequency, because just because we move into the spirit plane or into the heavenly realm doesn't mean that we're going to be elevated to a higher echelon. What actually happens is we go to the, for those that have done huge wrong, they are punished in a way that it's not hell and brimstone, but they're devoid of a God light. They're devoid of this magnificent light of God. There is a spark of light, but it's up to them to, because all of them would have spirit guides and spirit counselors that would help them to grow to the next rung on that ladder, to grow. And they have to, it's like an ascension process, but it could take, it is, while in our terms here on earth, you know, we're talking about hundreds of years, but in the spirit world, it could be just, it can be just maybe hours, years, mm-hmm. rather than hundreds of years. And there is always, always room for growth with the soul that has tormented somebody on the earth plane. And in saying that, I understand also from the spirit world and from the messages that I receive that not every soul wants to ascend and go to the light, that they are quite happy functioning in their own darkness, in their old program of deceit, their old programs of thinking that they don't need anybody and that they are better than and greater than anybody else. So with that type of, with that type of program and mindset, some souls choose to remain on the lower levels, on the lower echelon, and they don't ever, ever want to progress into the soul life. And in saying that, that would also mean that they do not want to better themselves, so that if they choose to reincarnate again, that they would correct the wrongdoings and the mistakes that they made in the previous lifetime. So it is quite a complex analogy to understand, George, but my guidance is very, very clear on that. There is always opportunity for even the worst, dare I say, criminals, worst murderer. There is always opportunity for absolution, for resolving the past wrong. But some do not choose to further themselves. So that's where this hell connotation is, where they remain in this kind of void, which is dark, rather than the light of Creator, which is much higher up on the higher echelons.
Mari, well, even though you had your father's presence that kind of convinced you to come back, whose decision is it ultimately to stay or come back? Is it the individual soul?
I firmly believe it is the soul. And before all of us incarnate in this earth plane, we write out a sacred contract. And this sacred contract is, it's like our passport as we enter the earth plane as a baby. And this sacred contract will always be overlighted by spiritual guides and a council of 12 that sit with us when we decide that we want to go back to Earth. And it's always the choice of the soul to return. We're never forced. It's not a God criteria that we need to go back to correct the wrong. But most of us, as we are more awakened to our spiritual growth now and the evolution of our souls, we want to come back. We want to address the wrongs. And it could be as simple as maybe learning how to forgive. We could be a pauper in our past life, and we can more or less be a prince in this life, for the want of a better analogy. So this sacred contract will always highlight the work that we need to do when we come on earth, be it forgiveness, be it teaching, be it to save maybe the planet. There is always an agenda. But when we come through the veil of amnesia or the veil of forgetfulness, we forget about this contract. And some of it, like mine, was that I needed to resolve and have the courage and the strength to step out of a dysfunctional, loveless marriage. And because in the old thinking in Ireland, you know, you made your bed and you lay in it. We didn't have divorce, we had separation. So one of my contracts, which I have been shown since by spirit, was that I needed to have the courage, the power, and the strength to leave that marriage and to set myself free to do the real work that I signed myself up for. And part of that also, George, was that I, a few months after my NDE, I was actually going to end my own life.
Oh, gosh, Mariel.
Yes.
No.
And it was within 3 months, because when I returned from a hospital, I suppose I expected a more loving greeting from, bless my ex, who has taught me a lot. But it wasn't there. I don't know. I suppose I expected a magic wand to wave over us and that everything was going to be beautiful from now on.
He probably was incapable of doing that, I would guess.
Absolutely. And you know what, George? I have blessed him many, many times. And I have learned so much from him because I needed to step into my own power. And for anyone who is in a relationship that is totally dysfunctional and is maybe abusive, part of our contract is that possibly that we will step out of it. And we will know that we deserve better and that we will respect ourselves more. And so for the likes of my ex-husband, yes, he was incapable of that, of showing love, because he was a prodigy of his own rearing, okay? So the night I was going to end my life, I had no concept of time, what I was going to do. I had three beautiful babies down in their beds, but I just wanted the pain and sadness of loneliness, the pain of despair. I was hiding. I could tell nobody my marriage was so bad.
What made you not go through with it? What made you stop?
George, would you believe my father, as I was stepping out the door with the keys of my husband's new car, and I had it planned, I was going to drive into the Docklands in our city, which didn't have protective barriers at the time, and many accidents used to happen there.
And just go right over. Okay.
I was going to put my foot in the accelerator, close my eyes, and just go for it.
Jeez.
And I was going, leaving my front door, George, I was trying to open it, and my father's face once more came on the door. And I know people will probably say, this is not for real. My father's face appeared right at the door, and his hand, the same hand that stopped me in my near-death experience, appeared. And he said to me, he had a pet name for me and for the rest of the girls, and he said, Molly Ekujin, keep your powder dry. That in Ireland means, George, that, you know, settle down, things aren't as bad, keeping your powder dry means you don't allow the water to wet it. So I knew that I was going out that door at around 2-ish in the morning when the whole world was asleep. And when I came round, I was sitting on my couch in the sitting room and the clock was striking 5 in the morning.
Wow, 3 hours went by.
3 hours, George, that I have totally no recollection of, none whatsoever. All I know is I when I came round, I was frozen. My teeth were chattering. My body was shaking. and then the realization of what I was about to have done.
Oh, my God. You must have broken down and cried.
You know what, George? I remember just shaking and shaking and my teeth shaking and shaking. I thought my teeth were going to fall out of my head. And the realization that my three babies would have been left without their mom, who they needed more than, and this sounds terrible, but would have needed more than their dad. So the next day, George, I went to a solicitor. It was the first time I took the power in my own hands and I went to a solicitor. And believe it or not, George, I didn't even have the price of a bus there, and because I didn't have a car at the time. He had the car. So I had to scramble into pockets and under the bed to see could I find money to get a bus into the city so that I could meet a solicitor. And I was very blessed, and I have continuously been blessed, George, with the amount of people that I have encountered all along the way. My court case lasted 6 years.
That's a long time.
So, yeah, it was horrendous.
Marielle, hold on for a second. We're at the top of the hour break. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more, but we're also going to let you chat with our great listeners who will have questions for you about the other side.